recognized with him? Someone who's dead, like a ghost? Simon shook his head, bewildered.
No, why?
Maya hesitated. I saw my brother, the ghost of my brother. I think Valentine was making me hallucinate.
Well, he didn't try anything like that on me. I was on the phone with Clary. I remember dropping it when the shape came at me.
He shrugged.
That's it.
With Clary? Maya looked almost hopeful. Then maybe they'll figure out where we are. Maybe they'll come after us.
Maybe, Simon said. Where are we, anyway?
On a boat. I was still conscious when he brought me onto it. It's a big, black, hulking metal thing. There are no lights, and there are things everywhere. One of them jumped out at me, and I started screaming. That was when he grabbed my head and banged it into the wall. I passed out for a while after that.
Things? What do you mean, things?
Demons, she said, and shuddered. He has all sorts of demons here. Big ones, and little ones, and flying ones. They do whatever he tells them.
But Valentine's a shadow hunter, and from all I've heard, he hates demons.
Well, they don't appear to know that, said Maya. What I don't get is what he wants with us. I know he hates downworlders, but this seems like a lot of effort just to kill two of them. She had started to shiver, her jaws clicking together like the chattery teeth toys you could buy in novelty stores. He must want something from the Shadow Hunters, or Luke.
I know what he wants, Simon thought. But there was no point in telling Maya. She was upset enough already.
He shrugged his jacket off.
Here, he said, and tossed it across the room to her.
Twisting around her manacles, she managed to drape it awkwardly around her shoulders. She offered him a wan but grateful smile. Thanks, but aren't you cold? Simon shook his head. The burn on his hand was entirely gone now.
I don't feel the cold. Not anymore.
She opened her mouth and closed it again. A struggle was taking place behind her eyes. I'm sorry about the way I reacted to you yesterday. She paused, almost holding her breath. Vampires scare me to death, she whispered at last. When I first came to the city, I had a pack I used to hang out with, Bat and two other boys, Steve and Greg. We were in the park once and we ran into some vamps sucking on blood bags under a bridge. There was a fight and I mostly remember one of the vamps just picking Greg up, just picking him up and ripping him in half. Her voice rose and she clamped a hand over her mouth. She was shaking. In half, she whispered. All his insides fell out, and then they started eating. Simon felt a dull pang of nausea roll over him. He was almost glad that the story made him sick to his stomach rather than something else, like hungry.
I wouldn't do that, he said. I like werewolves. I like Luke.
I know you do. Her mouth worked. It's just that when I met you, you seemed so human. You reminded me what I used to be like before.
Maya, Simon said, you're still human.
No, I'm not.
In the ways that count, you are. Just like me.
She tried to smile. He could tell she didn't believe him, and he hardly blamed her. He wasn't sure he believed himself. The sky had turned to gunmetal, weighted with heavy clouds. In the gray light, the Institute loomed up, huge as the slabbed side of a mountain. The angled slate roof shone like unpolished silver. Clary thought she had caught the movement of hooded figures in the shadows by the front door, but she wasn't sure. It was hard to tell anything clearly when they were parked over a block away, peering through the smeared windows of Luke's truck. How long has it been? She asked. For either the fourth or fifth time, she wasn't sure.
5 minutes longer than the last time you asked me, Luke said.
He was leaning back in his seat, his head back, looking utterly exhausted. The stubble coating his jaw and cheek was silvery gray, and there were black lines of shadow under his eyes. All those nights at the hospital, the demon attack, and now this, Clary thought, suddenly worried. She could see why he and her mother had hidden from this life for so long. She wished she could hide from it herself.
Do you want to go in?
No. Jay said to wait outside. She peered out the window again. Now she was sure there were figures in the doorway. As one of them turned,
She thought she caught a flash of silvery hair.
Look!
Luke was sitting bolt upright, rolling his window down hastily. Clary looked. Nothing appeared to have changed.
You mean the people in the doorway?
No. The guards were there before. Look on the roof. He pointed. Clary pressed her face to the truck window. The slate roof of the cathedral was a riot of Gothic turrets and spires, carved angels, and arched embrasures. She was about to say irritably that she didn't notice anything other than some crumbling gargoyles, when a flash of movement caught her eyes. Someone was up on the roof, a slim, dark figure, moving swiftly among the turrets, darting from one overhang to another, now dropping flat to edge down the impossibly steep roof. Someone with pale hair that glinted in the gunmetal light like brass.
Jace!
Clary was out of the truck before she knew what she was doing, pounding down the street toward the church, Luke shouting after her. The huge edifice seemed to sway overhead, hundreds of feet high, a sheer cliff of stone. Jace was at the edge of the roof now, looking down, and Clary thought, it can't be, he wouldn't do this, not Jace. And then he stepped off the roof into empty air, as calmly as if he were stepping off a porch. Clary screamed out loud as he fell like a stone and landed lightly on his feet just in front of her. Clary stared with her mouth open as he rose up out of a shallow crouch and grinned at her.
If I made a joke about just dropping in, he said, would you write me off as a cliché?
How did you do that?
She whispered, feeling as if she were about to throw up. She could see Luke out of the truck, standing with his hands clasped behind his head and staring past her. She whirled around to see the two guards from the front door running toward them. One was Malik, the other was the woman with the silver hair.
Crap.
Jace grabbed her hand and yanked her after him. They raced toward the truck and piled in beside Luke, who gunned the engine and took off while the passenger side door was still hanging open. Jace reached across Clary and jerked it shut. The truck veered around the two shadow hunters. Malik, Clary saw, had what looked like a flinging knife in his hand. He was aiming at one of the tires. She heard Jace swear as he fumbled in his jacket for a weapon. Malik drew his arm back, the blade shining, and the silvery-haired woman threw herself onto his back, seizing at his arm. He tried to shake her off. Clary twisted around in her seat, gasping, and then the truck hurtled around the corner and lost itself in the traffic on York Avenue. The Institute receding into the distance behind them. Maya had fallen into a fitful doze against the steam pipe, Simon's jacket draped around her shoulders. Simon watched the light from the porthole move across the room and tried in vain to calculate the hours. Usually he used his cell phone to tell him what time it was, but that was gone. He'd searched his pockets in vain. He must have dropped it when Valentine charged into his room. He had bigger concerns, though. His mouth was dry and papery, his throat aching. He was thirsty in a way that was like every thirst and hunger he'd ever known blended together to form a sort of exquisite torture, and it was only going to get worse. Blood was what he needed. He thought of the blood in the refrigerator beside his bed at home, and his veins burned like hot silver wires running just under his skin.
Simon?
It was Maya, lifting her head groggily. Her cheek was printed with white dents where it had lain against the bumpy pipe. As he watched, the white faded into pink as the blood returned to her face.
Blood.
He ran his dry tongue around his lips.
Yeah?
How long was I asleep?
3 hours, maybe four. It's probably afternoon by now.
Oh, thanks for keeping watch.
He hadn't been. He felt vaguely ashamed as he said, of course, no problem.
Simon?
Yes?
I hope you know what I mean when I say, I'm sorry you're here, but I'm glad you're with me.
He felt his face crack into a smile. His dry lower lip split and he tasted blood in his mouth. His stomach groaned.
Thanks.
She leaned toward him, the jacket slipping from her shoulders. Her eyes were a light amber gray that changed as she moved.
Can you reach me?
She asked, holding out her hand. Simon reached for her. The chain that secured his ankle rattled as he stretched his hand as far as it would go. Maya smiled as their fingertips brushed.
How touching. Simon jerked his hand back, staring. The voice that had spoken out of the shadows was cool, cultured, vaguely foreign in a way he couldn't quite place. Maya dropped her hand and twisted around, the color draining from her face as she stared up at the man in the doorway. The man had come in so quietly neither one of them had heard him.
The children of moon and night getting along at last.
Valentine, Maya whispered. Simon said nothing. He couldn't stop staring. So this was Clary and Jace's father. With his cap of white silver hair and burning black eyes, he didn't look much like either one of them, though there was something of Clary in his sharp bone structure and the shape of his eyes, and something of Jace in the lounging insolence with which he moved. He was a big man, broad-shouldered with a thick frame that didn't resemble either of his children's. He padded into the green metal room like a cat, despite being weighted down with what looked like enough weaponry to outfit a platoon. Thick black leather straps with silver buckles crisscrossed his chest, holding a wide-hilted silver sword across his back. Another thick strap circled his waist, and through it was thrust a butcher's array of knives, daggers, and narrowing, shimmering blades like enormous needles.
"Get up," he said to Simon. "Keep your back against the wall."
Simon tilted his chin up. He could see Maya watching him, white-faced and scared, and felt a rush of fierce protectiveness. He would keep Valentine from hurting her if it was the last thing he did.
"So, you're Clary's father," he said. "No offense, but I can kind of see why she hates you."
Valentine's face was impassive, almost motionless. His lips barely moved as he said,
"And why is that?"
"Because,"
Simon said,
"you're obviously psychotic."
Now Valentine smiled. It was a smile that moved no part of his face other than his lips, and those twisted only slightly. Then he brought his fist up. It was clenched. Simon thought for a moment that Valentine was going to swing at him, and he flinched reflexively. But Valentine didn't throw the punch. Instead, he opened his fingers, revealing a shimmering pile of what looked like glitter in the center of his broad palm. Turning toward Maya, he bent his head and blew the powder at her in a grotesque parody of a blown kiss. The powder settled on her like a swarm of shimmering bees. Maya screamed. Gasping and jerking wildly, she thrashed from side to side as if she could twist away from the powder, her voice rising in a sobbing scream.
"What did you do to her?"
Simon shouted, leaping to his feet. He ran at Valentine, but the leg chain jerked him back.
"What did you do?"
Valentine's thin smile widened.
"Silver powder," he said. "It burns lycanthropes."
Maya had stopped twitching and was curled into a fetal position on the floor, weeping quietly. Blood ran from vicious red scores along her hands and arms. Simon's stomach lurched again and he fell back against the wall, sickened by himself, by all of it.
"You bastard,"
he said, as Valentine idly brushed the last of the powder from his fingers.
"She's just a girl. She wasn't going to hurt you. She's chained up for..."
He choked, his throat burning. Valentine laughed.
"For God's sake," he said. "Is that what you were going to say?"
Simon said nothing. Valentine reached over his shoulder and drew the heavy silver sword from its sheath. Light played along its blade like water slipping down a sheer silver wall, like sunlight itself refracted. Simon's eyes stung, and he turned his face away.
"The angel blade burns you, just as God's name chokes you," said Valentine,
his cool voice sharp as crystal.
"They say that those who die upon its point will achieve the gates of heaven. In which case, Revenant, I am doing you a favor."
He lowered the blade so that the tip touched Simon's throat. Valentine's eyes were the color of black water, and there was nothing in them. No anger, no compassion, not even any hate. They were empty as a hollowed-out grave.
"Any last words?"
Simon knew what he was supposed to say. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. He tried to speak the words, but a searing pain burned his throat.
"Clary," he whispered instead.
A look of annoyance passed across Valentine's face, as if the sound of his daughter's name in a vampire's mouth displeased him. With a sharp flick of his wrist, he brought the sword level and slashed it with a single smooth gesture across Simon's throat. Chapter 17. East of Eden. How did you do that? Clary demanded as the truck sped uptown. Luke hunched over the wheel.
You mean how did I get onto the roof?
Jace was leaning back against the seat, his eyes half closed. There were white bandages tied around his wrists and flecks of dried blood at his hairline.
First, I climbed out Isabel's window and up the wall. There are a number of ornamental gargoyles that make good handholds. Also, I'd like to note for the record that my motorcycle is no longer where I left it. I bet the Inquisitor took it on a joyride around Hoboken.
I meant, Clary said, how did you jump off the cathedral roof and not die?
I don't know.
His arm brushed hers as he raised his hands to rub at his eyes.
How did you create that rune?
I don't know either, she whispered. The Seelie Queen was right, wasn't she? Valentine, he did things to us. She glanced over at Luke, who was pretending to be absorbed in turning left. Didn't he?
This isn't the time to talk about that, Luke said. Jace, did you have a particular destination in mind, or did you just want to get away from the Institute?
Valentine's taken Maya and Simon to the boat to perform the ritual. He'll want to do it as soon as possible.
Jace tugged at one of the bandages on his wrist.
I've got to get there and stop him.
No, Luke said sharply.
Okay, we have to get there and stop him.
Jace, I'm not having you go back to that ship. It's too dangerous.
You saw what I just did, Jace said, incredulity rising in his voice.
And you're worried about me?
I'm worried about you.
There's no time for that. After my father kills your friends, he'll call on an army of demons you can't even imagine. After that, he'll be unstoppable.
Then the Clave...
The Inquisitor won't do anything, Jace said. She's blocked the Lightwood's access to the Clave. She wouldn't call for reinforcements, even when I told her what Valentine has planned. She's obsessed with this insane plan she has.
What plan? Clary said.
Jace's voice was bitter. She wanted to trade me to my father for the mortal instruments. I told her Valentine would never go for it, but she didn't believe me.
He laughed, a sharp staccato laugh.
Isabel and Alec are going to tell her what happened with Simon and Maya. I'm not too optimistic, though. She doesn't believe me about Valentine, and she's not going to upset her precious plan just to save a couple of downworlders.
We can't just wait to hear from them anyway, Clary said. We have to get to the boat now. If you can take us to it.
I hate to break it to you, but we need a boat to get to another boat, said Luke. I'm not sure even Jace can walk on water.
At that moment, Clary's phone buzzed. It was a text message from Isabel. Clary frowned. It's an address, down by the waterfront.
Jace looked over her shoulder.
That's where we have to go to meet Magnus.
He read the address off to Luke, who executed an irritable U-turn and headed south.
Magnus will get us across the water, Jace explained.
The ship is surrounded by protection wards.
I got onto it before because my father wanted me to get onto it. This time he won't.
We'll need Magnus to deal with the wardings.
I don't like this.
Luke tapped his fingers on the steering wheel.
I think I should go and you two should stay with Magnus.
Jace's eyes flashed.
No,
it has to be me who goes.
Why? Clary asked.
Because Valentine's using a fear demon, Jace explained.
That's how he was able to kill the Silent Brothers. It's what slaughtered that warlock, the werewolf in the alley outside the Hunter's Moon, and probably what killed that Fae child in the park.
And it's why the brothers had those looks on their faces, those terrified looks. They were literally scared to death.
But the blood.
He drained the blood later, and in the alley he was interrupted by one of the lycanthropes. That's why he didn't have enough time to get the blood he needed, and that's why he still needs Maya.
Jace raked a hand through his hair.
No one can stand up against a fear demon. It gets in your head and destroys your mind.
Agrimon, said Luke.
He'd been silent, staring through the windshield. His face looked gray and pinched.
Yeah, that's what Valentine called it.
He's not a fear demon. He's the fear demon. The demon of fear. How did Valentine get Agrimon to do his bidding?
Even a warlock would have trouble binding a greater demon. And outside the pentagram?
Luke sucked his breath in.
That's how the warlock child died, isn't it? Summoning Agrimmon.
Jace nodded assent and explained quickly the trick that Valentine had played on Elias.
The mortal cup, he finished, lets him control Agrimmon. Apparently it gives you some power over demons. Not like the sword does, though.
Now I'm even less inclined to let you go, Luke said.
It's a greater demon, Jace. It would take this city's worth of Shadowhunters to deal with it.
I know it's a greater demon, but its weapon is fear. If Clary can put the fearless rune on me, I can take it down, or at least try.
No, Clary protested. I don't want your safety dependent on my stupid rune. What if it doesn't work?
It worked before, Jace said as they turned off the bridge and headed back into Brooklyn. They were rolling down narrow Van Brunt Street, between high brick factories whose boarded-up windows and padlocked doors betrayed no hint of what lay inside. In the distance, the waterfront glimmered between buildings.
What if I mess it up this time?
Jace turned his head toward her, and for a moment their eyes met. His were the gold of distant sunlight.
You won't, he said.
Are you sure this is the address?
Asked Luke, bringing the truck to a slow stop.
Magnus isn't here.
Clary glanced around. They had drawn up in front of a large factory, which looked as if it had been destroyed by a terrible fire. The hollow brick and plaster walls still stood, but metal struts poked through them, bent and pitted with burns. In the distance, Clary could see the financial district of Lower Manhattan and the black hump of Governor's Island farther out to sea.
He'll come, she said. If he told Alec he was coming, he'll do it.
They got out of the truck. Though the factory stood on a street lined with similar buildings, it was quiet, even for a Sunday. There was no one else around and none of the sounds of commerce, trucks backing up, men shouting, that Clary associated with warehouse districts. Instead, there was silence, a cool breeze off the river, and the cries of seabirds. Clary drew her hood up, zipped her jacket, and shivered. Luke slammed the truck door shut and zipped his flannel jacket closed. Silently, he offered Clary a pair of his thick woolly gloves. She slid them on and wiggled her fingers. They were so big for her that it was like wearing paws. She glanced around.
Wait, where's Jace?
Luke pointed. Jace was kneeling down by the waterline, a dark figure whose bright hair was the only spot of color against the blue-gray sky and brown river.
You think he wants privacy? She asked.
In this situation, privacy is a luxury none of us can afford. Come on.
Luke strode off down the driveway, and Clary followed him. The factory itself backed up right onto the waterline, but there was a wide, gravelly beach next to it. Shallow waves lapped at the weed-choked rocks. Logs had been placed in a rough square around a black pit where a fire had once burned. There were rusty cans and bottles strewn everywhere. Jace was standing by the edge of the water, his jacket off. As Clary watched, he threw something small and white toward the water. It hit with a splash and vanished.
What are you doing? She said.
Jace turned to face them, the wind whipping his fair hair across his face.
Sending a message.
Over his shoulder, Clary thought she saw a shimmering tendril, like a living piece of seaweed, emerge from the gray river water, a bit of white caught in its grip. A moment later, it vanished, and she was left blinking.
A message to who?
Jace scowled.
No one.
He turned away from the water and stalked across the pebbled beach to where he'd spread his jacket out. There were three long blades laid out on it. As he turned, Clary saw the sharpened metal discs threaded through his belt. Jace stroked his fingers along the blades. They were flat and gray-white, waiting to be named.
I didn't have a chance to get to the armory, so these are the weapons we have. I thought we might as well get as ready as we can before Magnus gets here.
He lifted the first blade.
A Brariel.
The Seraph knife shimmered and changed color as he named it. He held it out to Luke.
I'm all right, Luke said,
and drew his jacket aside to show the Kinjal thrust through his belt. Jace handed a Brariel to Clary, who took the weapon silently. It was warm in her hand, as if a secret life vibrated inside it.
Kamael, Jace said to the next blade, making it shudder and glow.
Talantes, he said to the third.
Do you ever use Raziel's name? Clary asked as Jay slid the blades into his belt and shrugged his jacket back on, getting to his feet.
Never, Luke said. That's not done.
His gaze scanned the road behind Clary, looking for Magnus. She could sense his anxiety, but before she could say anything else, her phone buzzed. She flipped it open and handed it wordlessly to Jace. He read the text message, his eyebrows lifting.
It looks like the Inquisitor gave Valentine until sunset to decide whether he wants me or the mortal instruments more, he said. She and Maris have been fighting for hours, so she hasn't noticed I'm gone yet.
He handed Clary back her phone. Their fingers brushed and Clary jerked her hand back despite the thick woolly glove that covered her skin. She saw a shadow pass over his features, but he said nothing to her. Instead, he turned to Luke and demanded with surprising abruptness,
Did the Inquisitor's son die? Is that why she's like this?
Luke sighed and thrust his hands into the pockets of his coat.
How did you figure that out?
The way she reacts when someone says his name. It's the only time I've ever seen her show any human feelings. Luke expelled a breath. He had pushed his glasses up and his eyes were squinted against the harsh wind off the river.
The Inquisitor is the way she is for many reasons. Stephen is only one of them.
It's weird, Jay said. She doesn't seem like someone who even likes kids.
Not other people's, said Luke. It was different with her own. Stephen was her golden boy. In fact, he was everyone's. Everyone who knew him. He was one of those people who was good at everything. Unfailingly nice without being boring. Handsome without everyone hating him. Well, maybe we hated him a little.
He went to school with you? Clary said. And my mother, and Valentine? Is that how you knew him?
The Herondales were in charge of running the London Institute, and Stephen went to school there. I saw him more after we all graduated, when he moved back to Alicante. And there was a time when I saw him very often indeed.
Luke's eyes had gone distant, the same blue-gray as the river.
After he was married.
So he was in the circle? Clary asked.
Not then, Luke said. He joined the circle after I, well, after what happened to me. Valentine needed a new second-in-command, and he wanted Stephen. Imogen, who was utterly loyal to the Clave, was hysterical. She begged Stephen to reconsider, but he cut her off. Wouldn't speak to her or his father. He was absolutely enthralled to Valentine. Went everywhere, trailing after him like a shadow.
Luke paused.
The thing is, Valentine didn't think Stephen's wife was suitable for him. Not for someone who was going to be second-in-command of the Circle. She had undesirable family connections.
The pain in Luke's voice surprised Clary. Had he cared that much about these people?
Valentine forced Stephen to divorce Amatis and remarry. His second wife was a very young girl, only 18 years old, named Celine. She too was utterly under Valentine's influence, did everything he told her to, no matter how bizarre. Then Stephen was killed in a circle raid on a vampire nest. Celine killed herself when she found out. She was 8 months pregnant at the time. And Stephen's father died too, of heartbreak. So that was Imogen's whole family, all gone. They couldn't even bury her daughter-in-law and grandchild's ashes in the Bone City because Celine was a suicide. She was buried at a crossroads outside Alicante. Imogen survived, but she turned to ice. When the Inquisitor was killed in the uprising, Imogen was offered his job. She returned from London to Idris, but never, as far as I heard, spoke about Stephen again. But it does explain why she hates Valentine as much as she does.
Because my father poisons everything he touches, Jay said bitterly.
Because your father, for all his sins, still has a son, and she doesn't. And because she blames him for Stephen's death.
And she's right, Jay said. It was his fault.
Not entirely, said Luke. He offered Stephen a choice, and Stephen chose. Whatever else his faults were, Valentine never blackmailed or threatened anyone into joining the Circle. He wanted only willing followers. The responsibility for Stephen's choices rests with him.
Free will, said Clary.
There's nothing free about it, said Jace. Valentine offered you a choice, didn't he? Luke said, when you went to see him. He wanted you to stay, didn't he? Stay and join up with him.
Yes. Jace looked out across the water toward Governor's Island. He did. Clary could see the river reflect.